Welcome back to the Venturesome Podcast. I'm here today with Evelyn Cho, Senior Product Manager at Coursera. Evelyn and I first met in 2009 or 2010 during an event called Future Midwest in Detroit. It was focused on social media. At the time, she was a marketing communications manager at Electromatic Products. She has since worked at agencies with clients like Verizon, Delta, USPS, and GM. She's also led growth and performance at Capital One and Uber. Outside of work, Evelyn values equality, empowerment, and social impact, serving on nonprofit boards and volunteering to coach and mentor other women. Evelyn, welcome to Venturesome.
Thank you, Rachel. I'm so happy to be here.
So it's been great to catch up with you a little bit. And so I'd like to start by talking about your career, because you've had an incredible career going from marketing communications to growth marketing to product management. And I know each of those roles are a little bit different. So what did it take to evolve your career and skill set into each new role that you've taken on?
Thank you very much for the kind words. When I first see this question, I'm like, oh, do I have an incredible career? But I think what I came to conclusion is that hindsight is 2020. I've always running this battle of like, oh, when I moved to DC first time, I should have just joined Uber. It was an early startup back then, like, but instead, like, I chose to join an agency. But going back to your question, I would say how I chose to evolve my career and skill set is doing an introspection at every point during my career. When I was looking to join agency, I realized there's a shift in terms of how people do marketing traditionally versus how in digital days, like, people use data to make decisions. When I was working at Capital One, I realized there are a lot of shift in terms of how infrastructure was built. So I taught myself AWS developer required skills. So I think there's really not a right or wrong answer. Every time I chose to join a new company, I have limited amount of information. So I make the decision based on what seems right at the moment. And I actually alluded to this concept in one of my blog posts called Five Lessons to Manage Chaos and Unpredictability in Job Search. And I think in career as well, like, we keep thinking like, oh, if I learn Python, if I do X and Y and Z, where nowadays it's ChatGPT, I could have an amazing career. But it's not the case, because things, people, they all change. So I would say do the introspection, see what your strengths are, what opportunity presents to you, and get yourself prepared, because opportunity happens in the most unexpected way. So if you are prepared, then opportunity could very nicely land on your feet.
I think that's a really great suggestion, because when you look at your career and you have the hindsight, you always think, I should have done X or Y, but you, unfortunately, you don't have mind reading skills or future telling skills. And so you have to make the best decision based off of the information you have right in that moment. And so I think that's really great introspection, but also, you know, knowing the reality of it is, we can't tell what the future holds. And so you're just going to have to make the best of whatever situation you're in at the time.
I think a lot of people, myself included, when we think about career opportunities or jobs, we tend to think it's a binary. If then that, like, if I try this, then I'll get that. But I came to realize it's not binary. It's more like an experimentation. Like, for me to sell a product, I don't know immediately if it's going to be a success. So I experiment. I experiment with, like, small cohorts of audience and see if this lands. And I think careers too, like, you don't always know what's going to be the most fulfilling, most secure, most interesting, exciting jobs, not even 12 months or 24 months down the road. But you know yourself. And I think, like, experimenting different interests, different hobbies, and different career paths, as long as you can tell that story so that it sounds like you deliberately think through your journey, I think there's no wrong answer.
Yeah, I think that's really great.
So a lot of people, I think, today are looking to pivot into new roles because maybe they have been laid off recently, or maybe they have taken a job and it's not a good fit. So what advice do you have for someone who's seeking out a new role that's maybe a little bit different than the job that they have previously been in?
Yeah, I am a hiring manager for several positions I've held. And one thing I always tell candidates is that focus on their strengths. I wanted to know if someone I hire can hit the ground and running in a short amount of time. So I always think if someone shows up with confidence and tell me a cohesive story, I've done this, I've done it really well, and this is how I can apply to the job I'm looking for. That's really the secret sauce when it comes to like hiring the right person. And the other thing is for job seekers out there, especially for early career professionals, I think the best strategy is to focus one change at a time, because I've seen people wanting to make the industry change as well as job or title changes. Like, I'm a designer at a traditional company. I wanted to become a product marketing manager in a tech company. To me, that's too many pivots. So I would focus on one thing at a time. Most importantly, especially for like pivoters or early careers, you want to get your foot in the door first. So focus on whatever you feel like you can have that cohesive linkage, then focus on something else. Once you build your network, once you build your reputation at the company, at the industry, then it becomes a little bit easier to make that switch.
I think that's such good advice, because if you are focusing on too many pivots and too large of a step, you might not ever get there and you might become really frustrated. And a lot of times I describe it to people as a stepping stone. Like, you need to have that stepping stone job to sometimes get you to whatever that ultimate final step is that you want. So I think that's really great advice.
Yeah. And then I know, like, given how competitive the job market is, I think it's still relatively a seeker's market, but given all these like tech layoffs, if anyone wanted to join a tech company right now, the person that's competing with those who got downsized from Meta, from Google, from Amazon. So when I first started applying for jobs, I think it was during recession 2008. And I'm pretty sure I submitted like over 100, close to 300 job applications. So the other thing I like to tell people is when you receive a no from a company, just think of the no as the next opportunity. No doesn't mean never. It means not right now. And no could also be you are destined to join a better company. So next opportunity could be the best opportunity.
I love that, because so often you interview at a job and you get really attached and excited, and then sometimes it doesn't pan out. And I've also been a hiring manager as well. And one of the things that I have realized sometimes is a candidate can be perfect, but not perfect for that particular job or perfect for the company's culture. And there have been times where I've interviewed people and what they're saying they want in a job, I know that our organization isn't going to offer that. I know that happened at a previous role where someone was describing that she wanted to get out of the day-to-day tactical work. She wanted to oversee strategy and not be the person writing the press releases and scheduling out the social media content. And the job she was interviewing for had a bit of strategy, but it was very heavy on executing the tactics. And so I recommended against hiring her, even though she had great experience. What she was saying she wanted in a job was not the job that we were hiring for. And I told the partner of the firm that this person is going to be really unhappy here because we're not hiring for the job that she thinks that she's interviewing for. So I think that's something too. You could be told no for a job, and it's because the hiring manager knows you're going to hate the job.
Yeah. And then also, like, the word strategy you say was just the right amount of ambiguity I think a lot of people face. Like, what is strategy? Is strategy just demanding actions from other people, and then you can just stay in your head and then give those comments. No, like even at a director or VP level, yeah, they are involved in a lot of strategy, but they still need to go back and forth with cross-functional stakeholders to get that strategy aligned. So there's never going to be just like a fancy version of, oh, I can do strategy. But at any level, it's still required to roll up your sleeves and do some sort of like tactical work. It just, the percentage might change. So I love the example you gave too, because I've seen that a lot. Like people wanted to do strategy, but what does strategy really mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So Evelyn, you're an advocate for women in tech through your involvement in Built by Girls, the National Association of Asian American Professionals, and the Anita Borg Institute for Women and Technology. What do you think is the biggest challenge women face in the workplace, especially in tech?
I would say this challenge is more prominent than women in tech. I would say every woman, whether you are a mom or fresh out of college, is women tend to take on too much things. And the expectation for men and women are also different. Like if a man takes on like an employee resource group position, the person is praised as, oh, charismatic, influential. Whereas I feel a lot of women at work or in tech, they just do a lot of things without realizing how does it really help them. And then really those involvement affect their lives. Like Rachel, you and I were talking about how dedicated we are at work. Sometimes we work more than 45, 50 hours a week. And then taking on and sitting at these like nonprofit boards is extra work. And then when it comes to like volunteer, your time is not compensated. And you still have to deal with people just like work. So something I always go back to is setting boundaries with not just like people on the board or in the nonprofit, because you have to take care of yourself. Like in the airplane, you have to put on your oxygen mask before you helping others. And something I love about Brené Brown is she said something like, daring to set boundaries is about having the courage to love ourselves even when we risk disappointing others. So I think it's great that we are aspire to help other people, but it's also important to think why we are doing this and taking care of ourselves first.
I love that quote because I think that really summarizes that feeling you have when you set a boundary and you say, I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to stop working at 5 p.m., you wonder if you're risking disappointing your boss or disappointing your team, but you have to have that courage to do that for your own sanity and for your own mental health, I think. So I really appreciate you sharing that. What advice would you give to young professionals who really want that opportunity to work with large brands like the ones you've worked with throughout your career?
Yeah, that's great ambition, wanting to work at big brands. When I was doing my MBA, the big brands are Sears. And I remember going to Chicago, touring the Sears facility and wanting a job there so bad. So I applied for an internship there. And I remember it was wintertime before the break. I had to go back home for Christmas. So once I was home, I was, of course, like nervous about hearing back about my internship application. Sears then sent me an email on Christmas Day saying, congratulations, you get the internship. And of course, as an international student, I was over the moon. I was so excited. I even celebrated with my parents. And 12 hours later, I got another email from Sears saying, we are sorry, that email was sent by mistake. You don't have the internship. So my point sharing this example is the big brands during the time that we thought is going to be the next big thing. Probably is not the case in like 2 or 5 years. Like, look at how fast startups or tech companies move. So I guess I would challenge the desire to work for big brands with some sort of self-search queries. Like, why do I want to work for big brands? Great. The advantage of working for big brands are probably something like, oh, my resume would stand out comparing to other people. I would have big perks. Maybe my salary or base salary would be higher. But also think about these advantages, because things always have two sides. The disadvantages are it might be more competitive. You might have to compete with a lot of other people, like get a lot of rejection, like we talked about. I would always weigh the pros and cons and see like what's more important for me at that point. And then I would say, if anyone wants to work for big brands, Google or whatever the next big thing is, have the story to prove you have the experience they are looking for. Right now, it might be artificial intelligence. For students, that might be tough. Like, how else would you have like artificial intelligence experience? But finding the experience that can prove to the employer that you've done this and you can apply that in a job, I think that's how I would approach the situation.
That's great advice. So I was listening to an episode on Career Climb, and you mentioned dealing with self-doubt. And I think that's something that every professional deals with at some point in their career, and something that a lot of us, I think, deal with very often, especially if you're a high achiever. So how do you manage self-doubt in your career?
I was having self-doubt when I got your email about joining Venturesome Podcast. I'm like, what am I going to share with your audience? So I think something we all do is we have the good side and then the bad side, the angel or the evil. Like, they constantly have those like conversations. Am I deserving this? Am I like worthy of all these attention? So I'm going to say how I manage my self-doubt is to be really honest with myself. I have a therapy, even though coming out of the culture I was raised, having a therapist is a sign of weakness. Like, when I told my parents that I'm seeking therapy, they were upset. They thought like, I'm perfectly fine. They give me like a healthy body, healthy mind. What am I to tell them that I need some help? So I would say being honest with yourself, either through talking to someone or have a community of support. And something I learned executive career coaching program is we work so hard. We move very fast, like hundreds of miles per hour. And sometimes we forget that we've made progress throughout all these times. So track the progress and then celebrate small wins. For job seekers, it might be, oh, I send out 10 resumes today. It's really hard, because after a while, any applications feels the same. But I did it. And then in this way, you focus on the progress you've made, not the outcome you receive. Because let's use job search for the same example. I cannot control how employers think of me when they receive my application. All I can control is how I show up. I choose to take actions every single day.
I think it's great advice to seek that support from outside of yourself. So whether it's a therapist or your mentor or a member of your community, you know, professional community or personal, that can help be that sounding board when you're having those moments of self-doubt, because I found that my friends are always the people who will pump me up the most, and they will tell me that I'm doing great work and I'm feeling like maybe I'm not doing enough. And my mentors are the same, where if I share something with them, they give me a bit of a reality check. So I think that it's really great to acknowledge that you have that self-doubt, but then also know that you have those people in your corner who can help you manage that.
Yeah, and I think self-doubt sometimes can be also seen as a fuel, because I think I'm not enough. Therefore, there is even more a reason to work harder, try harder. So I think of it as I have self-doubt, but on the flip side, it also helps me to propel, to try harder. And I might have a very surprising result. The cautions I would give everybody is when you try so hard because you have self-doubt, you could get burnout. And I'm sure a lot of people experience burnout at any point of their lives, is like just checking with self, like being honest with yourself. And then I think a lot of my self-doubt comes from comparing myself with other people. And I recently read something about being jealous and comparing myself with others is really a misplaced inspiration. I am inspired to be better. Therefore, I look around me to see where I land. But really, like, there's nobody else like myself, like my genuine self. So give myself some credit. Sometimes it's like I have to be my own cheerleader.
Definitely. That's really great. Venturesome is all about being ambitious, brave, and curious. What venturesome advice would you give to your younger self?
Growing up and throughout my career, I always feel I need to do something to prove myself. And then what happens is maybe 6 out of 10 times, I show up, I try really hard, I still don't get to where I wanted to be. But if I were to give advice to younger Evelyn, I would ask her to try it anyway. I heard this quote, I think it was from Mother Teresa. And she says, give the world the best you have, and it may never be enough. Give your best anyway. And I think the trying, experimenting without having any sort of attachment is really, really hard, because the amount of time and energy we invest in something, it's natural to expect something in return. But the world never works this way. So try it anyway. And then the other thing is, the society often tells me or women in color, there are certain things you should not do. There are very few female CEO, or there are a few female venture capitalists. All of this is changing now, but there's always going to be the first time you try something, and it's really like nerve-wracking. And this is something I got from watching the show Lost, that now that you know how old I am, I remember one of the characters, he was in a wheelchair, and one phrase he used over and over again, and I love it so much, is that nobody can tell me what I cannot do. So even though sometimes I go for a run and it becomes really hot and I felt myself out of breath, I keep telling myself, nobody can tell me what I cannot do. So all these energies, channels inside me, makes me feel I can do what I think I'm going to do. And I will do my best not to have any attachment, because if I have attachment to everything, I cannot go anywhere.
I think that's really great advice. And I love the give the world the best you have. It might not be enough, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't still give your best. Evelyn, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you? Where can people learn more about you?
Thank you, Rachel, for this amazing opportunity. I would say find me on LinkedIn. I also have my blog on Medium. It's under at Evelyn Cho. I think there's a dot between Evelyn and Cho. And I'm also setting up my coaching service at Mentor Cruise. So once we are connected, I can send whoever reaches out the link to book time with me.